Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome into the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck, and I am your host for the first hour. Boy, oh boy, do we have a lot to talk about in this first hour when we saw some serious fireworks this week in a wide range of markets, a lot coming on the back of more trade issues after China fired back early in the week, and some pretty big moving days, down days for U.S. equities, and more of the risk-off equities continuing to move higher. I am kicking off this weekend's show with a good friend of the show, Jesse Felder, founder and editor of the Felder Report. Jesse, let's first talk about this volatility. Volatility was very low about a week and a half ago as we were heading into the Fed meeting, but that volatility has skyrocketed because of fears globally and from other central banks, and also revolving around trade. What do you think about this uptick in volatility that is showing some fear creeping even more so into the markets?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the summertime is supposed to be kind of a slow time for the stock market generally. But I was looking at volume, you know, leading into the Fed meeting, and volume was lower than it typically is, you know, during the Christmas week in the stock market, which to me was just crazy how many traders had fallen asleep at the wheel. And because there were a lot of things, and I think we talked about this the last time I was on your show, a lot of signs of dispersion and deterioration under the surface in the indexes. You know, the number of new lows in the stock market was rising even as the market was making new highs. So we saw a ton of Hindenburg omens triggered across the NYSE and the NASDAQ, which when you see clusters like that, it's usually a sign that, you know, some volatility is approaching. But now with the Fed meeting out of the way and, you know, these other geopolitical things, you know, the market's free to begin reacting. And so, yeah, volume has gone, or volatility has gone from nothing to soaring.
It has. And one thing to follow up on here, though, is you even mentioned when we did talk about these Hindenburg omens, it was pointing to a correction in the U.S. equity markets. As I said on the onset here, a lot of this correction did come on the back of this trade war escalation between China and U.S. But you don't think that's really the only reason, do you? This is almost just an excuse for why the markets are selling off?
Yeah, I think so. The earnings season was not terrific, and you saw a lot of companies hammered on, you know, whether it was bad earnings or bad guidance, and especially the more economically sensitive sectors. I think this is something we talked about last time I was on, too. You look at, like, retail not doing great, transportation not doing great. We've had this Dow theory non-confirmation for months now, where the Dow Jones Industrial Average has made new highs, but the transports have been well off of their highs. And that's, you know, I mean, that's one of the most classic signals of economic troubles potentially that, you know, has been around forever. And, you know, people just weren't paying attention to this stuff. So these signs have been there, but I think it was just volatility was suppressed leading into the Fed meeting. Now the Fed meeting's out of the way. We're starting to see some of these other things. It's just kind of opened the door to this rise in volatility.
Now, what about the excuse that volatility was low? Because there still was so much money in the system and still so much cheap money, especially when you look at yields around the world, which is something we'll get into the bond market here shortly. But there was a lot of available money. There was this thought that the Fed would be easier along with other central banks. That thought has only grown, but now we're seeing uneasiness in the markets. How come finally people don't care if the Fed's easy anymore or other central banks are easy anymore?
Well, you know, there was talk leading up to the Fed meeting that a rate cut would be bullish, which is, that was true maybe in the past, you know, prior to 2000. But since over the last 20 years, rate cutting cycle, and this is why I think Jay Powell was so careful to say this is not the beginning of a new rate cutting cycle, right? He tried to be clear that this is a mid-cycle cut, because the history over the last 20 years is when the Fed starts cutting interest rates, risk assets go in the toilet. And it was amazing to me to see so many people I think LPL Financial was putting out tons of research saying rate cuts are bullish, rate cuts are bullish, and look at the returns 12 months out after a rate cut. They ignored the last 20 years worth of data in all of that research that they're putting out, which to me is, you know, fascinating, the cognitive dissonance there. But over the last 20 years, rate cutting cycles have essentially been a sign that that things are not going as well as a central bank wants, and the risk assets respond to that. You know, stocks and junk bonds usually respond very negatively to that. And so I think it's looking more and more like this is the beginning of a new rate cut cycle, and risk assets, you know, are going to continue to be pricing that in, the risk of recession. So there's potential, you know, there's plenty of potential downside for stocks and junk bonds. You know, with the leverage on corporate balance sheets right now, it could be a very, very difficult bear market. Once we finally do enter, and I do think this is, like we've been saying for months now, this is a part of a topping process, and we are potentially heading into a new bear market right now.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I really do think we are heading into a new bear market, but you also need to consider that this bull market was 9 to 10 years long. So it was extended anyway. A lot of data was showing that valuations were getting overextended. And now finally, we might be nearing the end of this topping cycle. But let's talk about the bond market too, because yields are significantly lower around the world and almost across Europe. We're seeing negative yields. But that being said, U.S. yields are playing catch up with pretty much everything under that 2% level right now and continuing to fall. Do you think that it's getting a little overdone in the U.S., or is this simply a game of catch up that could last a long time for U.S. yields?
No, I firmly believe this is a blow off, another blow off in the bond market. It's been interesting to me to see that even though the bond, you know, the long bond hasn't made a new high yet, we're still below that high that was set in July of 2016. Sentiment is much more extreme today than it was back then. People are just, I mean, the thing that I've been seeing on Twitter this week is bonds are the new FANG, which to me is, you know, just perfectly exemplifies the sentiment extreme. And when you look at the charts, especially, you know, you look at like Swiss and Austrian, those ultra long-term 50 and 100-year bonds, those charts are absolutely parabolic. And that's an absolute super basic structure for anybody who's studied technical analysis at all. That these types of parabolic structures usually end in a crash. And so, I mean, you look at these things and they're up 80%, 100% in the last, you know, 9 months or six to nine months, which is absolutely crazy. And they're trading at, you know, 250 relative to 100, you know, par. And so the things are, I mean, incredibly, incredibly overvalued. Sentiment is extreme. Technically, for the U.S. bond market, tomorrow, the TLT, the long bond ETF, tomorrow that ETF will trigger a daily DeMarc sequential exhaustion signal or sell signal, and on Monday it'll trigger a weekly sell signal. So the last time I saw these types of sell signals was in July, like that 4th of July week in 2016, and the bond market reversed hard after that. Same thing of positioning. You look in the futures market, small speculators in 30-year bond futures have recently put on their biggest long position since 1998, October 98. And in 98 and 2016, those kind of other times bonds went, you know, parabolic like they are right now. You know, the bond market, you know, fell 20% plus over the next, 6 to 12 months. So I really look at this as panic buying into the bond market, and it's not going to end well.
Okay, so one more comment here. It really seems like this trade is sounding a lot like that short VIX trade that we saw not that long ago at the end of the year when everyone was short the VIX, and that's when markets just kept on moving. That was about a year and a half ago, actually, and that all caught a lot of people off guard. But again, Jesse, what about that discrepancy between where U.S. bonds are and where the rest of the world bonds are? Is it simply because the U.S. still has one of the strongest economies out there? Or why won't they play more catch-up?
The reason they won't play more catch-up is already hedging costs to hedge the dollar or make it negative. It wipes out all of the interest on U.S. Treasuries across the curve. So if you're a Japanese or European investor, the only way you can buy U.S. bonds right now and earn interest is by not hedging the currency risk. And so, you know, this gets back to, you know, your view of the dollar. And to me, it's remarkable that the dollar has reversed down to the downside, since the Fed meeting so hard. I mean, today we saw three central banks cut interest rates and the dollar's still declining. And so to me, that's a huge divergence. Usually you look over the last 10 years, at least bonds and the dollar move in sync. And that makes sense because, you know, money flows into dollars, it goes into the bond market, or it flows out of dollars and comes out of the bond market. And right now, the bond market is soaring and the dollar is tanking. And to me, that's a sign that foreign investors are not super happy with investing in dollars when you have what's going on with the fiscal situation combined with new legislation in Congress talking about potentially taxing foreign investment. We have the Federal Reserve who's trying to stimulate inflation as one of the reasons why they're cutting interest rates, not necessarily to support the economy, but more so to try and boost inflation expectations. And so I think there's a lot of reasons why foreign investors are going to start thinking twice about investing their money in treasuries or in dollars. And they lately have been doing so unhedged. And so if the dollar does continue to reverse to the downside, that's going to inspire a lot of these overseas investors to dump treasuries because they are exposed to currency risk.
Okay, very interesting combination there, how you're tying those two together. But just a quick comment, you're saying that the dollar's tanking. It's still arguably in this uptrend. It did just make a higher high during this 1.5, about just over 1.5 year recovery. So please back up that comment on why you're saying the dollar's tanking.
Yeah, I mean, so the dollar peaked in late 2016, early 2017, had a pretty steep sell-off into early 2018. It's rallied since then, but we're below the 61.8% Fibonacci retracement of that decline. So this is on a longer-term time frame, a lower high below that 2017-2016 high. And so it's, to me, it's just kind of like bonds, you know. It's fascinating to me that dollar bulls have gotten so excited. I think DSI in bonds was 98% twice this week. DSI in the dollar has been very, you know, almost as high as it has been in bonds. And so people are getting super excited over a lower high, which is usually a very good bear market sell signal. And I view this as a bear market rally in the dollar, even though it's lasted, you know, 18 months or something. But we're still in the context of, in my view, a longer term bear market. You can see this too technically as a rising wedge pattern that broke in that May-June timeframe. And then this rally into the Fed meeting just tested the underside of that trend line. You know, as my friend Chris Kimball would say, it was kind of a kiss goodbye before the dollar rolled over to the downside. So, I do think, you know, the dollar's below it was, you know, below where it was in November of last year. So this is kind of another shorter term topping process in the dollar that I think if the dollar bear market resumes, is going to be very bearish for the treasury market.
All right, let's move over to one more market, one that you and I touch on quite regularly. That is the gold market. Gold is just screaming higher as we're recording this. Gold is above 1500. And this is all, again, just on the back of a lot of money rotating into some safer assets. Do you think that gold is getting a little overdone here with just how aggressively it has been moving higher? Or is this just the start of maybe a prolonged, almost euphoric move?
I think this is the third wave in a new bull market for the gold price. I think the bottom of the bear market was that late 2015 bottom, obviously, where we got down to whatever it was, 1050. Then we saw the strong rally in early 2016. And then we've had this sideways move, essentially. But this new breakout higher above 1350 is the beginning of this third wave. So that's, you know, Elliott wave terminology. Bull markets move in five waves. And the third wave is always the strongest. So, you know, gold went from 1050 to 1350 in that first wave. The second wave, you know, it's going from about 1200. It should be bigger than 350 point move. But this is also why Paul Tudor Jones said if gold gets above 1350, it's going to 1700 in a heartbeat, because it has this super long base now that it's built from 2013 to 2019. So it's like a 6-year base that the thing is built. And once you get a breakout of that big of a base, I don't see any technical resistance. 1750, we could easily go up another 50 bucks before this thing even takes a rest. But 1700, you know, is coming. And that's just the projection off of this long-term base. But, you know, in the longer term too, gold is really highly correlated with the fiscal deficit. And so if we start to see fiscal deficit, we're already running over $1 trillion. This is also the other thing with, you know, treasuries, to come back to that for a second, is that, you know, the treasury has to issue 1.2, 1.4 trillion in new debt this year. Probably next year, it'll be at least as much. Where's the demand going to come for, you know, for that much new issuance? But the deficit being over $1 trillion means the dollar is going to be under pressure. Whether it's the dollar being, you know, correlated or gold being inversely correlated with the deficit, you can look at it either way. But if we go into recession, which is what it looks like a lot of these markets are pricing in right now, this deficit's going to blow out. We're going to see $2 trillion deficit. We're going to see it, you know, approaching 10% of GDP again, potentially. And under that scenario, gold's going to, you know, take out its 2011 highs. So I think in the short run, yes, we're in the middle of a third wave rally in the longer term context of a bull market. That should see gold go to at least, you know, 1550 in the short run, 1700 over maybe the next couple of months. And if we go into recession, it's going to take out the old highs. So that, I mean, I think that when you see a lot of people right now feeling like, oh man, I missed the gold bull market, that's a sign that you're in the middle of a bull market. You know, people don't ever make that comment at the tail end of a bull market. At the tail end of a bull market, they're all piling in without any second thoughts whatsoever. So I think from a sentiment standpoint too, it's safe to assume we're in the middle, you know, smack in the middle of a very strong bull market for the precious metals right now.
Hey, I'm with you, Jesse. Just how long that base took to form, how long of a bear market it was too, and now with everything seemingly going even more towards the favor of a bullish gold trade, it's all very encouraging for those gold investors. Now, yes, it doesn't mean great things for, let's say, the rest of the world and economic growth, but there did need to be this natural move into some of these precious metals, these safer assets, just because of how much these high-flying risk-on assets had moved. And yeah, this exploding deficit that continues to grow really around the world and especially in the U.S. But hey, it's something you and I had been talking about, looking to the precious metals. You even outlined the Bang stocks, which were the big miners. Are you still focused on these Bang stocks, or are you starting to drive down a little bit more into some of the other gold equities, either stocks or ETFs?
You know, I'm mostly focused on the metal. I do own a couple of the miners. I own some Newmont Gold Corp, which has not been as good as some of the others. But, you look at these stocks like Newmont Gold Corp, it is forming it's formed a basically 4-year base, 3-year base of its own. And if it breaks over this $40 level, you know, the stock's going to go to 70, 80 bucks. And so it's interesting to me to see, you know, the miners are still lagging the metal. I think if these gains prove sustainable, and in the metal, and I think they will, the miners still have a long way to go to catch up. I think last time we talked, we talked about the silver price, and I thought silver was going to catch up to the gold price, which it has been doing. And as a way to play that, I bought some Pan American Silver, back when that thing got ridiculously cheap. And that stock's done incredibly well, but I haven't sold a dime of it because silver prices have a long way to go higher too. And, I think that's probably one of the highest quality names to play that side of it.
All right. Hey, Jesse, it's great having you on the show. I always get a lot out of our conversations. I know a lot of our listeners really like when I get to feature you for a couple segments on the weekend show. It's been a pleasure chatting with you, taking up the first two segments here. Jesse, I hope that you have a great rest of your weekend, and we will be chatting again probably in about 1 month's time. Thanks, Jesse.
Thanks, Corey. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.